You're listening to the Run for Your Lives podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome to the show. I'm Daphne.
And I'm Paik.
And this is the Run for Your Lives podcast.
This episode, we're talking about the dystopian action horror film, The First Purge. Not to be confused with The Purge, which was the first of the Purge series. But no, the fourth movie in the Purge series titled The First Purge. Directed by Gerard McMurray and released July 4th, 2018.
Yes. I wanted to cover the Purge series. I've wanted to do it for a while. And when I knew that when we did it, I wanted to do it in the order of not when the movies were released, but in order of when things took place. Mm-hmm. And so the first Purge actually takes place in 2016. But the Purge, which is the first film in the franchise, doesn't take place until 2022. So I wanted to make it the chronological order.
Yeah, I'm good with that. I've never seen any of these movies other than the first Purge, which is not this one, but the original, The Purge, that came out. I saw that one in theaters with some friends when it first came out because there's all the buzz about, like, what is this kind of concept? And I saw it and I enjoyed it, but I never watched any of the sequels. So as we work our way through this series, which we're not going to do like all of them back to back to back to back.
No.
We'll sprinkle them out as we continue on in this season and next season and whatever. I don't know how far apart we'll spread them, but
yeah,
we'll get through them. So I will be I'll be revisiting that first one. And then after that, it's all new for me when we get the rest of these. So it's kind of like your Tremors in a way. Where, you know, I'd seen the first one and then, you know, or you had seen the first one and then you're experiencing them all alongside me, loving them. And it's the coin is flipped this time.
It is. I'm excited, though, because I was telling you before we started recording that I actually liked the second and third movies, which is The Purge Anarchy and The Purge Election Year, more than I liked The Purge. I can't wait to introduce you to them because they're fun. Like, as a horror movie, they're pretty well done and they're fun to watch. Although watching them, it gets uncomfortable sometimes because things hit a little too close to home with some of the stuff that happens, as it kind of did in this one, as far as things that were happening. But James DeMonaco does not shy away from including current events or, you know, reinterpretations of current events.
Yeah. Social commentary.
Yeah. He definitely, he doesn't shy away from that. So that's one of the things I like about this series is it does include those pieces.
Yeah. There's definitely a lot of social commentary in here. Gonna go ahead and just say, I pulled some of my punches in my notes, but not all of them. So, I almost want to say I'm sorry if I offend you with my stuff, but I don't know, because if you're if you're a person that takes offense to the people that I make fun of in here, then I don't know. Maybe I'm not sorry, because be a better human.
Yeah. we'll talk about this more when we cover The Purge. But the cool thing about this series, too, is they only had a $3 million budget when they made The Purge, and it grossed almost $90 million, and that kind of blew people away, and that is what got this series kicked off, basically.
Yeah.
And so the first Purge is actually number 4 in the series.
Yeah. Now, again, a lot of the social commentary in this movie, we'll talk about it to the best of our ability, try to be conscientious.
Absolutely.
The best that two white people can do talking about this movie, because this movie is a lot of commentary about, you know, the black community and black culture and unfortunately, me and Daphne do not have that background, so...
No.
You know, we will do what we can, but we would love to hear from people who maybe have a little more introspection and stuff on that, for sure, if we get that chance. But for now, you're stuck with us.
Yeah. This is definitely... When I think of Run for Your Lives and what we're trying to do on this podcast, it fits the genre types. It's one of the genre types that we're covering, but it goes beyond that because of the social commentary. And I like to think that as James DeMonaco doesn't shy away from it, neither do we. Mm-hmm. Like, we're going to do our best to tell it or to discuss this in the most tactful way possible. And right. Again,
but I'm also gonna be making jokes and making fun of people.
He so is. You can't hold Peg back. It's just not possible.
Gonna take my jabs when I can.
I think I have a feeling when or what you're going to take jabs at, but we'll see. I'm not sure. Not 100% sure.
Yeah, so it was interesting. I took one note before I even started watching at the very top. Before I even hit play, there's one note I have because it's just, well, the Rotten Tomatoes scores are atrocious. So I'm either going to be pleasantly surprised by this one or I'm going to have lots of jokes. Either way, it's going to be fun. Stick around and find out.
Yeah. We all know, though, Pig, that you can't count on Rotten Tomatoes 100% of the time. You really can't.
Yeah, no, you really can't.
You can't. You don't know what, you know, you can't, everyone has different tastes. And so, according to Rotten Tomatoes, a lot of people did not like this movie. I don't know why they didn't like it. I didn't read any of the reviews. Maybe it hit a little too close. Maybe they didn't like it because it was kind of in your face at times. I liked it. I like this series as a whole, including the TV series, which we won't cover on this podcast, but I did like it. It lasted for 2 seasons.
Well, I guess do what we usually do and get into it. Of course, before we start breaking it down, character by character, talking about stuff like that. It's been a while on this podcast. People know what to expect. You've got production notes. I've got a synopsis. We've got things.
We got stuff and things here. Mm-hmm. Okay, so... It was filmed in Buffalo, New York. As we mentioned, it's the fourth movie in the franchise, and it's a prequel to the trilogy. The first film in this franchise that James DeMonaco did not direct, but he did write it. He instead wanted to have a black director, Gerard McMurray, take the vision and interpret it. And do it justice.
Which makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Yeah. He wanted it to be authentic. I watched a couple of interviews that he did before we got on here to record this podcast. And yeah, he was very adamant that he wanted a black director because he wanted the authenticity. He did the very same thing with The Forever Purge, which touched on the Latino community in Texas, you know. He went with an appropriate director to tell the story.
Yeah. That's good.
So the budget for this one is $13 million. Gross box office is $137.1 million. So you can see, despite people not being happy with the movie, a lot of people did go to see it.
Yeah.
It still commands quite a bit of an audience. It's 97 minutes long. Paik, bring on your synopsis.
All right. America's new political party comes to power and conducts an experiment. No laws for 12 hours on Staten Island.
Oh, man. It feels like the Wild West on Staten Island at times in this movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a bit crazy. One thing I want to point out before we start breaking into characters is I had missed this. I don't know how. But I feel like the actual term for things, the purging, actually came from one person that was in this film. He was the one that said it first. And that was Skeletor. Yes, yeah. There's a character named Skeletor.
Ah, E-Man!
No. Not that Skeletor.
Are you sure?
I'm sure.
Okay.
Yeah. He's a polarizing character on his own, but this Skeletor in this movie is quite a character himself. We kind of meet him at the very beginning of the movie, but
yes,
he is not the main character. Tell me, Paik, who you think the main character is, because I've gone back and forth between two of them.
Yeah, I mean, there's two. Mm-hmm. There's two main stories that you're really following these two people who are connected.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, depending, it could be Dimitri or it could be Naya.
Yeah.
Both of them are definitely main characters. I mean, those are the two characters. Like, that's really the only two character segments I have. I have Dimitri and his gang, and I have Naya and Isaiah and their friends. Yep. Like, I have, like, these, like, two segmented things. So, yeah.
Yeah, it is segmented like that. I mean, you get this other area, like, character area, which is the NFFA group that's conducting everything. But I don't, as diabolical as they were in this movie, I think so much of the me comes from Naya and Dimitri.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I've got like those, just go ahead and, you know, look ahead down the road of what we're talking about. That's what I have, is I have those two character sections, and then I have like a government section, which, yeah, is like NFFA people, and also Marissa Tomei's character of Dr. Updale, who is not with the NFFA. She's just like this psychologist who's leading the experiment, the architect, so to speak, as they call her. And she's kind of included in that as well. And then some of their own mercenaries. We'll get to that.
Oh,
stuff.
God.
And then I just have a like section on other purgers, other people who are participating.
Oh, there are definitely some interesting purgers in this one. Because you've only ever seen the first one, this is the first movie that you're going to see where things are actually taking place, and you're going to be seeing purgers versus the very small section of purgers that we saw in the original movie.
Yeah. So where do we start? Which one do you want to start with?
Let's go with Dimitri. I just feel like his story is so... It's really complicated because he is a drug dealer.
Mm-hmm.
He is not who you should be cheering for in the movie, really, probably, more than likely.
He's like the hero of the movie, but he's the hero of this night. But like, does he really change who he is after this? Probably not. We don't know. Like, so, yeah, it's definitely a complicated character. So, yeah, I think it's good to start with. He's this like crime boss dude, leader of this gang. Which you would think he would be all about this experiment, the purge, but chaos is actually kind of bad for business, right?
Yeah.
You know, as he says, he can't trust something that he doesn't fully understand what it is.
Yes. It's true. And I mean, he honestly could have left, he could have taken all of his stuff and left Staten Island for the night, but it was going to be quite an undertaking to get all of the drugs and the money off. So he... You know, he's staying.
it's not, you can't really just pick all that stuff up and move it somewhere else quickly.
No.
Yeah. So you've got to stay and protect it. And then there's also like the lesser kind of dumb reason. It was like, and we can't look weak to the people. And
yeah.
It's like, oh, it's better than being dead, but you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. But Dimitri doesn't think that there's going to be a lot of killing. He thinks they'll be robbing and looting.
Which. Honestly, he's right.
He's right.
On
their own.
Yeah.
That's what's
correct.
Yeah.
If left to just the citizens of Staten Island, he has a good beat on what the people in his community are like. And he was correct.
Yeah.
It wasn't until, and we will get to this, they had to start funneling in outside resources to make things happen the way they wanted to.
Yeah.
The game was rigged.
Yeah. It's crazy because this was an, quote, experiment, but there was a desired outcome and things were fabricated to get to that desired outcome. And that right. was Arlo Sabian's plan from the beginning, was mm-hmm. to implement whatever he had to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Dimitri's got quite a setup. At first, because like when Naya like comes to like confront him about Isaiah being hurt and this stuff, and he's like, well, step into my office. And then it just shows them walk into this like lavish building with like stacks of drugs and money and stuff everywhere. And I was like, is his office attached to that basketball gym? I'm assuming it's not, because that's the dead opposite of subtle. I mean, it's yeah. over the top regardless, but if it's located elsewhere, at least it's a little, it's
just like, yeah,
that, yeah. It's a little much for just like a drug dealer den. It's like, that's like mafia boss yeah. level stuff.
And at the gym, he's having such a great time. Mm-hmm. Like, he's talking to the players and giving them tips and telling them what to do. And you get to see this side of him. And then Naya takes no shit. Like, that's one thing I love about her character, is she takes mm-hmm. no shit. And we'll talk about her a little bit later as far as her background and what's happening with her. But she was very upset. Because although Dimitri didn't know, Naya's brother Isaiah was working a corner and got slashed by Skeletor.
Yes. And those are real words and real things that happen.
Yes.
That is not a pull a name no. in a situation out of a hat. No. That's not AI generated.
No. I have to tell you that writing Skeletor, when I was taking my notes, it finally stopped changing it to skeleton.
Yeah.
After I had changed it like 4 or 5 times. Like, it's right. kind of ridiculous.
Oh, I had the same problem because I covered Midnight Mass over on Strange Indeed, and I take all of my notes, and so every time I typed Naya, it was like, Anya, you mean Anya? Yeah, I was like, no.
Naya. Yeah. Like, no, it doesn't. At one point, I felt like, I'm just gonna, like, make an abbreviation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I didn't really type Skeletor very often. He has a different nickname every time I wrote a note about him, so.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess we'll get to learn what the nicknames that you've given him yeah. are.
You'll hear some of those, yeah, as we go. So we talked about Dimitri and his group saying that they're going to stay, but he was very adamant. Nobody participates. Nobody's purging.
Yeah.
Stay at home. Guard your stuff. We're just going to keep an eye on our product, our money, and ourselves, our lives.
Mm-hmm.
Lock it down. Get this night over with, and then business as usual tomorrow.
Yeah. I think he was concerned that the police would take them out, because this is a great opportunity to take right. out their entire operation.
Yeah.
Legally. Either
the police or, you know, rival gangs, whatever it is. It's like, hey.
Yeah.
It's not worth the risk. But, of course, we get one of his guys, Capital A, and some other defectors that are working under him that decide they are going to participate and even take the opportunity to turn on D if they have the chance to do so, and they take their opportunities there by hiring a couple women of the night as Seven gets some girls. I think it was Seven. One somebody, yeah, gets some.
Seven got the girls, and these are girls that he knew. Like, they've mm-hmm. been there before. It's not. They're not new girls. They're girls that have been coming there.
Yeah. And so that's going on. And then they turn on him and try to attack and kill him under orders from Capital A, who had promised them all kinds of money and all kinds of things. As he planned, this was the time to take out Dimitri and become the new king of this group. And yeah, it doesn't go so well. Yeah, and it was a really interesting kind of like crazy scene, because things were mostly calm through the movie up until that point, where the girls attack Dimitri, and then it's also cut with our comic book supervillain, Skeletor, stabbing motherfuckers at the block party.
Oh, man.
All set to the song Up by Designer, who was in this movie. He was one of Kel's guys. I recognized him immediately. I was like, holy shit, that's Designer, the rapper. And then his song started playing in the next scene. I was like, okay, that's cool. But yeah. Doing those two major characters who are in hiding up until that point, then have to head out for different situations. Dimitri's going after Capital A because, I mean, that shit's not going to slide. You don't hire somebody to kill him and get away with it.
No.
And then Naya ends up leaving her safety, but not safety at all, because you're stupid to think that church would be safe in the first place ever. Why? True. Why?
Well, it
Why
might have been.
No. I don't think so.
It might have been safe.
I don't think so. But it's like, if it wouldn't have been those people, somebody eventually would have got there, I think.
I don't know that they were riled up enough to do it. Like, I think the mercenaries really...
True.
Yeah.
It might have been. But knowing what this movie was, immediately they're like, we'll find safety in the church. And I'm like, yeah, right.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Even if you have security at the door, I'm not sure it's going to be safe.
No.
But going back to Dimitri, do you know what the names of the girls were?
I did not.
It's amazing. Elsa and Anna.
That's funny. it was an icy situation.
Yeah. It really was.
And he could not let it go.
Nope.
So.
No. Yeah. I liked the creative way that he took down Capital A. With the girls outside and him coming out strutting like he's, you know, the new king and you're my queens and blah, blah, blah. And then out comes Dimitri.
Yeah, A got capped.
Yes.
along with the detractors.
Yes. But,
yeah. Yeah, and then I was saying, you know, Naya left to go find Isaiah after she realizes he's not in Brooklyn like he said he was. But we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Dimitri and Seven, after that, are headed back when they get broadsided by a flaming ice cream truck, which is unique. I will appreciate that. D sure can handle himself, though. Gets out.
Oh, my goodness. Takes
care of these, mercenaries that were there. Like, dang. Okay. He does not die. He doesn't know how to die, right?
I think he was starting to realize just how serious this was, that it wasn't just... He couldn't just go back home.
Yeah.
Because stuff was happening in his neighborhood that was going to change the face of it, really.
Yeah. Which is an interesting scene because, yeah, once he realizes, he puts the pieces together and realizes that these are international mercenaries that are brought in from the government in order to cause chaos and kill people and get the desired results from this purge. And so it's interesting because, yeah, he decides to, like, fight for his community. And then it kind of sets up, like, you want to root for him. But like you said, I was just like, yeah, you're like, hell yeah. You know, arm up with this absurdly large arsenal, wage war against the government plans, protect your city and your people, except that you peddle drugs to and create an epidemic of your own. So you're also not protecting your, you know, Naya has a good line. It's just like, you know, yeah, you're your hero for, like, one night. It's like, but 364 days of the year, you harm this community.
Yes.
And I'm like, yeah, you know.
She doesn't hold back when it comes to him.
Right.
You could tell from the beginning they had a history, just couldn't figure out, you know, how deep did it go. But little by little, you started to learn, like, she would say things that got you to the conclusion that you needed to get to. And was actually Lorenzo who noticed the ink, the tattoos. He's like, these are mercenaries. They're not supposed to be here. Like, they don't live here.
Yeah. So at least for this night, he's going to be the protector of the community.
Yeah.
And go and wage war. And there's a lot of cool. Yeah, they take off. That's where we see. I wish we got a little bit more of the wise men, those three old guys. I like them a lot.
I did too. They were so cool. I think
I did really enjoy them. We didn't see them much. They had a little conversation at the beginning of the movie with Dimitri, and then Dimitri swoops in to save them after. I mean, they were holding off pretty well. They were facing off against the George Zimmerman fan club.
Oh, man. But,
you know, things were looking a little dire, but Dimitri and his crew show up, do their work, and kind of have that moment. And then after that, they're feeling pretty high and mighty, like, all right, we can handle this. And then the drones. The drones are fucking armed. Of course they are. Of course they are.
That made me so angry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
and at that point, it's just Dimitri left. I mean, Seven survived, but he is incapacitated. I mean, there's no way he's getting up and going into the tower.
No,
right?
He's able to give him a fist bump, and that's about it.
Yeah.
But during that time, he lost. I mean, here's Dimitri, who really cares about his loyal soldiers, mm-hmm. like Blaze and Lorenzo. Lorenzo basically saves his life by shoving him under the car.
Yeah.
And takes all the bullets. And Dimitri even takes his coat and puts it over Blaze's head after, you know, she's obviously dead. I mean, he was feeling, I think, pretty good going into it, knowing he had all of his group around him, his major players, his henchmen. I don't think he felt quite so confident, but he didn't have a choice because of Naya.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, but he's got to, yeah, protect Naya and the tower, everybody he can, which it's Naya and the people in her apartment. Nobody else really made it out because of him. I mean, maybe a few that they kind of just skipped over, it didn't show, because after the events, the show down there in the tower and in Naya's apartment, then it was like Naya's friend,
Dolores.
Yeah, says something, you know, let's see if we can find any more people who are still in here, and then they just kind of cut to them walking out, and who knows how many of those people were in there. There were more survivors than you would think, and people, and he's kind of the hero being raised up there.
Well, you have to imagine the people from the floors above them probably made it.
Yeah, the people from above, because, yeah, they're going up level by level.
Yeah.
Yeah, which Dimitri, I wasn't sure exactly what it was that he shot, but he blew up something. made something go boom.
That was something that Seven had gotten because the NFFA had released a whole bunch of weapons. Mm-hmm. Gotten them on the street. They put them on the street, basically, for people to get. Because they wanted this to be a bloodbath. Yeah. They wanted this to be successful, and it meant that the lowest income, and this is the saddest thing.
Oh, yeah.
It had to be the lowest income locations. It had to be those people who lived in those buildings killing their neighbors for it to be considered successful, because that's what they were going for. They wanted it to be the economically challenged people, basically, to take everyone out.
Dimitri takes out the other mercenaries. Yeah, he just, the intruders there, blows them up, survives the gunshot from the gunslinging dominator.
Oh, God, he was the creepiest.
Man,
I wanted to punch him. And I'm not a violent person, but it's like, man, they did have a near miss. And they had a rocket, so the NFFA mercenaries had a rocket launcher that they were going to use until someone snuck up behind one of the guys, took him out, and ended up being Skeletor.
Yeah.
Which gave Dimitri enough time to detonate the explosion.
We'll talk about Skeletor more in those other Purger notes. But yeah, I was at that point, we hadn't seen him in a while, and I was just like, whatever happened to him? I'm sure he'll show back up. And I was like, oh, there's Scarface, a.k.a. Tony Montana. We got him. He's here. and he survives just long enough to take out a few and then get annihilated right after that. But that's fine.
He just needed to...
Probably best he's not hanging around.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. Creepiest. One of the creepiest characters I have ever seen. He just... Oh, my God.
Yeah, I don't know if I can call him creepiest, because it was so over the top that it just became comical, honestly.
Oh, really?
But we'll talk about him later.
Okay.
But yeah, that's all that I have on Dimitri. We've covered his storyline there, unless you've got some more.
I might have a couple of things. I really liked the conversation that Dimitri had with Freddy, Taz, and Sharpie. They were the three wise men, the three kings, yeah, or the three stooges, depending on what you want to talk about.
Larry, Moe, and Jerry Curl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked they were having this conversation of the comparisons between, like, Staten Island and ancient Rome, and, like, the neighborhood was becoming the Colosseum, and is it Christians or lions or gladiators or slaves? Like, what is this?
Yeah.
They were discussing what was happening. And, again, I feel like at that point, Dimitri was really just this bystander almost. Like, he was just going to take care of his own business, his self. But he was also thinking about, you know, he did offer to the wise men, if you need anything, let me know.
Yeah.
Just like he wanted Naya to come and stay with him at his place and didn't want her to be going somewhere else because of safety.
Yeah.
It's not like there have been, like, two or three purges. This is the very first one, and nobody could really expect what was going to happen. I do think also that Dimitri is pretty good at giving, you know, motivational speeches to his group.
So, I mean, he's definitely a leader.
He is.
For sure.
He's definitely a leader. I think my favorite one was when he had everyone in the arsenal, and he says, "Our neighborhood is under siege, gentlemen, from a government who doesn't give a shit about any of us. But there's a lot of good people out there who we're going to have to protect now. See, the NFFA forgot about one thing. They forgot about us. This is our home. Let's show these white-haired motherfuckers never to fuck with our island again." And I liked that.
Yeah.
Because partway through, he had to change his tune because he realized, okay, so they've put money on the streets, basically, by putting these guns out there. They have put weapons out there and brought these people in to take all of us out. It's not just about us versus each other. It's us versus the institution. And it's crazy if you think about that type of manipulation.
Oh, yeah. I've got notes. I've got thoughts about that. That's more when I get to government and other purger stuff.
Okay. All right.
That's the part where I'm going to get real spicy in a lot of notes.
Okay.
But we'll wait till we get there.
All right. Also kind of tied to this, the Three Kings, they were in dire straits because they had run out of ammunition when Dee got there in time to...
Yeah.
To, you know, to save the day, basically, because all they had were, like, a sledgehammer, and they had a knife, and they had a bat, and I think it was Taz had already been hit and had been shot already.
Yeah.
They were not in good shape. And I love the exchange between Freddy and Dimitri, where Freddy says, "As I live and breathe, the devil himself." And Dimitri says, "He shall appear." And then he says to his group, "Let's give these wise men some more weapons." So you've got the opinion, you know, you got the feeling that he was taking care of them. So I really liked that. And the other thing I want to mention is when they were out and about in the vehicle, they started hearing of different altercations, like on the radio. And they ended up at a place where one whole group of people, of his people, had been taken out. And it turns out it was Kells and his group.
Mm-hmm.
And you could tell that that really bothered him a lot.
Yeah. Well, then the next segment I've got, again, I mentioned Naya, her brother Isaiah, and then, like, their group that they kind of come together with. And we talked about Naya a little bit in that last one. And I think I agree with you. I like her a lot. Probably my favorite character of the movie. She fights for what's right. We see her at the beginning of the movie protesting against the purge, and we know that she's, like, that's not the first time she's been on a picket line. You know, like,
yeah,
she protests and fights for social justice and freedom a lot. And so that's just the person she is. She's not afraid to confront Dimitri and call him out to his face on different things. We see how well she cares for her brother. Yeah, and then again, I have that line which says, you know, Purge is one day, you hurt our community 364 days of the year. Even though they have a past, you know, she'll call him out. He respects her. You know, there's probably not a lot of people who can speak to Dimitri that way, but she can get away with
it. She can because of their history. Because he loves her. I mean, that is, that's something I think he has to reconcile every day, is that this is the life he leads. This is what drove her away from him. He's not changing, so she's never going to be with him, and yet he still will do anything he can to protect her.
Yeah, like you mentioned before, he offers to let her and Isaiah stay with him at his place to ride it out, and she refuses. I mean, that's that lack of respect for who he is now. Yeah. It's like, no, we're good. I'm not going to rely on you for anything.
It's because I think he says that he would take care of Skeletor, basically, for hurting Isaiah. And she's not down for that because she doesn't think, you know, she doesn't think that violence solves, you can't solve the issue with more violence.
Right. Yeah. And then Isaiah is his own whole thing. Of course, you know, we see he is, we pick up on him after their conversations. You know, she didn't know he was even, like, running, you know, the corner, working a corner for Dimitri. Dimitri didn't either. He was just working under Kells. But, you know, he was off doing that. And it's, again, he's just, like, he's in this situation. They are this, you know, economic hurt. You know, they are the poor people of this area, this low-income people. And you get driven to these desperate times where it's like, I'm sick of being held down in this little box. And so, yeah, sometimes I'm going to have somebody's got to get their hands dirty to make the money that we need. Yeah. And Isaiah puts it on himself to be that person to where he's going to participate. Because if we haven't mentioned this already, the NFFA has this situation where the people who stay behind get $5,000, but you also get more payment for actually participating. And so he's going to go all the way through full participation, exploitation of the poor by a government that's mostly at fault, right? Yeah.
it's rough.
And, you know, aside from the payment, there's the tracking chips, contact lenses that are recording everything. We're going full on sci-fi wackiness.
yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. And they have these contacts. And then I noticed this time that I watched it, because I've watched it a bunch of times, the contact lenses were different colors. Yeah. Like, they weren't all like light blue. And I wondered if that was based on some sort of system they put in place where they decided the ones that are the most serial killer like, or scary, or the ones that have the tendencies to commit acts of violence, they got red ones, or purple, or I'm not sure.
I don't know. Also, could have just been random just for aesthetics. But yeah, and then back with Naya, I did say, you know, it's like, these people are going to plan on just staying in the church all night. Like, that's actually going to be a safe place. And I was like, they're not that naive, are they? Yeah. Yeah, they are.
But unfortunately,
Naya is there for more admirable reasons, because I remember at first, like, when it's like, you know, and it's only in Staten Island. And I was like, well, then why is there anybody there? Get the fuck out, you dummies. Yeah. And then it's like, well,
they're paying them.
People are being, you're being paid just to stay at home. And then there's people like Naya who have this kind of more admirable reason. Like, there's some people that can't leave.
Right. And she's trying to protect stays behind. Them.
Yeah. To get as many people in that church as possible. Again, I don't think it was actually the safest plan, but is anywhere. Honestly, just staying in their apartment probably would have been the safest if it wasn't for that situation at the end.
Yeah, and I think, honestly, that a lot of people, that was their plan. They were going to collect the $5,000. They weren't going to go out and earn more by killing people, but they were going to collect the $5,000 by staying home, by staying in their homes.
Yeah.
I mean, at one point, Isaiah is walking down a street, and he looks and he can see in the windows, there are people. One of them even waves at him.
Yeah. Which, man, that scene, as cheesy as the eye contacts kind of could be, they were really creepy in that scene.
They were.
It was very effective. I thought it was really
cool.
They were.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's walking down that street and you look in the windows and the rooms are all dark because you wouldn't want anyone to know that you're home. But you see these glowing eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a bit much.
Yeah. And Isaiah lies to his sister about leaving to Brooklyn because he doesn't want her to know. He knows she's going to be super disappointed in him staying and participating.
Yeah.
I noticed a fun little Easter egg when he's on the phone with Naya while he's in his room before he sets out to purge. Did you notice the poster that's on his bedroom wall?
I did. Halloween.
There is a 2018 Halloween poster, which is kind of weird. It'd be weird because, like you said, this takes place in 2016,
mm-hmm.
which would be before. But even, I think this movie came out. Yeah, it did. This movie came out before that movie even came out. That movie didn't exist, wasn't in theaters yet when this movie was shown, which probably it wasn't even filmed yet back when this was filmed. So I was like, that's kind of interesting. But it is Blumhouse. I don't know. You pronounce it one way or the other. I don't. But yeah, Jason Blum, Bloom, whatever. So yeah, it is a Blumhouse production, and so they snuck their own little nod
mm-hmm.
into this movie about another one of their projects. It's clever. I enjoyed it.
It is. This movie actually came out on July 4th, 2018.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, it was in the works. It was going to be released. It just hadn't been yet.
But like by the time when they filmed this movie,
yeah,
who knows what they had been doing with that. But it was you know, a planned thing. It was like, it was a little nod to something that they were going to be releasing later, which is fun. The contact lenses, I've got another note. You know, it's like, that's some unique merch. Kill for your government in style.
You know, I wear glasses. I didn't need them until a couple of years ago. I can't imagine trying to put contacts in. Like, I don't know if I could.
I've never done it. I wouldn't know. yeah, and then out of all the people that they're in the church, I do recognize one face, and I was like, Lieutenant LaGuardia, what are you doing here? Get back to Miami where it's safe. Why are you in Staten Island in this church?
It's not safe for her there.
No.
In Miami either.
Like, you have a Bay Harbor butcher to catch. Go back down to Miami. What are you doing?
Hey. I think she might be safer in this movie.
Well, yeah.
Overall.
Yeah.
Come on now.
Yeah.
Come on. Yeah, exactly.
How things turned out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
See, I did notice just a random little note. The marquee outside of the church. Pray, not purge. Galatians 5:16, which of course I had to quote. What that is, in case people were curious if they didn't know, Galatians 5:16, which says, "So I say, walk by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the flesh."
Oh.
Just throwing that out there. Just a fun little factoid. See a Bible verse, and I'm like, oh yeah, we'll throw what that is. Isaiah goes to this block party with Kells and his people, which, again, I talked about, I called it the comic book supervillain Skeletor. Shows up and is shanking people and runs into Isaiah. Isaiah had a chance to take out Captain Extra, but he's not cut out for this. So maybe he should have actually taken the bus to Brooklyn. things get real fast after he runs into him.
Well, Kells tried to keep him out of trouble. That's what he was trying to do. Like, you don't want to go see him, man. Not really. Come to this block party. Like, he was trying to keep him from doing something crazy because he also knew that Skeletor was insane.
Yeah.
He didn't want...
Not the person you want to run into.
No. And I questioned Skeletor. He had a girl that was grinding up against him, dancing with him, and he took her out. That might have been his only chance to have someone, just because...
Yeah.
Because he's just so far over the edge.
Completely insane. Isaiah does get away, which I have that note. Yeah, where he yells at him, I'm the knight, Isaiah! I'm gonna find you! And I was like, well, dude thinks he's Batman and the Joker at the same time. Figure it out.
Make a decision. He's too confused. He's too confused. Man. And then Skeletor at that point disappears, kind of.
Yeah, we don't see him. Well, we do see him one more time, because Isaiah's hiding in that little warehouse. Naya comes to get him. And then when Naya gets there, after she runs into, to keep with the Batman metaphors, I said, beware, Gotham, for I am the baby-faced groper, which was actually really creepy.
Yes, and that's not what they call it, but I'm glad that you said that instead. Because there is another one. There is a term, yeah. A term for it. And it was a subtle, not so subtle, reference to a certain person's saying regarding.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's where that came from. Because, like I said, James.
Kitten Grasper.
Yes. Yes. Because James DeMonaco doesn't shy away from those things. He's right, including tongue-in-cheek things in this movie.
Mm-hmm. And then Isaiah makes probably the actual first smart move of the movie on his own, taking out the contact lenses. That will help you a little bit, not being seen, right? And then as he's out there, Naya's waiting for him to come out, and oh, great, sweaty Krueger's back.
Because he did have these... syringes.
Yep.
Yeah.
I told you, I've got a different nickname every time he comes up.
At one point, I was, when I was writing the notes about him going to the block party, I'm like, okay, he's got syringes on one hand, and, like, he thinks he's Freddy Krueger, and on the other hand, he's got a huge knife, like he thinks he's Michael Myers or Jason. Uh-huh. I think he's confused. And now you also think that he's Batman or the Joker. So who is he? Really? Yeah,
I also called him Tony Montana. So there is lots of names for him. I said I didn't really type Skeletor very often. But yeah, Isaiah gives him a little slash and they run off. She wasn't fully unscathed, but I guess she's okay. It was a light throat slashing. She's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah. In the same spot that he did that to Isaiah, too, on her neck. Oh, yeah. It's the same place.
They go back to the church, which it didn't go well with that.
No.
I told you the church wasn't going to be safe. It's only a matter of time before motorcycle Nazis appear. This is America.
Very sad. I mean, like I said earlier, I don't think... anyone would have gone there and done anything to them. I don't. I think it was incited, unless they were incited by these interlopers who came into the town, were hiding out in some bunker somewhere.
Right.
Yeah.
But they get there, they run into Liguerta and her...
and her daughter, Selena.
Selena! that's a big thing for Texans.
Yeah, you know what? James did it when I watched The Kill Count. He uh-huh. said, Selena says, which is a nod to the movie, right? Yeah.
Yep. No.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, but the group get back to Naya and Isaiah's apartment, which I'm going to say you should not immediately turn on the lights when you get there. It would probably be better to make people think nobody's home.
Yeah.
Not that it would have mattered there at the end, but... I hadn't seen this before, so when they walk in and Isaiah immediately flips the lights, I'm like, no! What are you doing? Stop! Bad idea.
You need to keep the lights off. Come on!
Bad idea. Click. Good idea. Click. Turn them back off.
Okay.
And then quick, stack furniture and mattresses against the door, because that'll stop bullets. No, but
They were doing what they could with what they had, Paik.
Yeah.
A wise, wise man said that first.
Yes. But actually, yeah, they just wanted to slow them down so Naya can bust out her badass skills and shoot people down in the knees and their legs. And then we just got Shank City going on, take out several soldiers. And then Dimitri appears. takes out that one more, joins them. Of course, at that point, they still had Captain Gempstein to deal with, but you know.
You know what he's actually called? Do you know?
I don't.
Okay, so let me clue you in. He's actually referred to as General Smiley. And his group are called the Smileys.
Mm-hmm. I almost called them that, the Smiley, but except some of those faces were not smiling at all. No. So then I didn't.
I think Chris used to play this game called Manhunt, and I think there was a group of, like, a gang or something of, you're basically, you had to fight, and I think they were called the Smileys. Mm. And I know they're not related, but when I was reading about this and earlier, that's what it took me to, was that game. It's an older yeah. PS2 game, I think.
Yeah, but then that's really all the notes I have about Naya, because then it gets to, yeah, Dimitri comes in, she stays with him to fight. Then we have this bomb that goes off that Dimitri shoots, they hide under the mattress, and then so on and so forth back down. And the night is over.
Yeah, well, I think it was Seven or Lorenzo that had gotten all of these weapons that were out on the street, basically. Mm-hmm. And there was one of them is the thing that Dimitri actually threw out there for them to shoot. And it was an explosive. It's basically mm-hmm. some sort of explosive that had been created. Because at one point, Dimitri's just like, we're just going to take all this and go out and make a world of hurt for yeah. all of the mercenaries that are here.
If you don't have any more notes about that, oh, yeah, section of people, huh?
I do appreciate that Dimitri called Naya to tell her he was coming, so she knew mm-hmm. that he was on his way.
Yeah.
But I also think that she was going to do what she had to do in order to survive, and they were doing okay, but they were going to die, I think, without his help.
Yeah.
But she looked relieved when he said he was coming. A little bit relieved. But she also knew that she had to do things. I found it funny that Dolores had a gun with 5 bullets in it. That was kind of funny.
Hand cannon.
Yeah. And Naya knew how to shoot. Well, because she had no boyfriend. And then they all put it together that it was Dimitri. And it's like, I'm pretty sure you guys would have known that anyway. Like, I don't think it's a huge surprise.
Yeah.
So, at the end of this, at this point, I was thinking, when the movie ended, oh, I wish that maybe they would cover this maybe later on. But then I realized that the years that each of the movies takes place in, that in order for them to participate, I think Naya and Dimitri would be like 60. And I don't think that, you know, badass maybe, but due to the years, because Anarchy comes out, or Anarchy supposedly takes place in 2023. Election Year takes place in 2040.
Uh-huh.
And Forever Purge is 2048. So it really doesn't work. Uh-huh. But I wanted to see, because Dimitri said they, you know, we fight. So I was thinking maybe he changed enough to realize that he could put some of his talents to use. Even if he is a drug dealer, maybe he can recalibrate his organization to try to fight against the NFFA's plans for the purge. So are you ready to unload about the government?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, let's do it. So yeah, this movie starts off after the Skeletor thing. Yeah, we get the intro showing this kind of the functions of this new political party that is so extreme. They're kind of like, the following analogy has been removed because I don't know how to make political commentary that won't make someone mad, and I don't feel like doing that yet. But yeah, this first purge is not nationwide, which I thought was interesting. It's just Staten Island, which, you know, what goes into choosing that as the location? Like, what city do we as a nation just hate the most?
I think they picked it probably because it was something they could completely close off.
Yeah.
And people couldn't run away. They'd have to stay there if they didn't get the last bus out.
Yeah. And so this new political party with Bracken, President Bracken, he gets elected, paying people to participate. It's very nonsensical, but I'm along for the ride. Sure. We'll go with it. And then, yeah, we have like the news people out there and all these like reports going on. We have, I guess, Arlo you have in here. I never knew what his name was. It was never stated as far as I heard. And then I was like, oh, that's who that guy is. He's just that fucking guy in my notes. But then him and Dr. Updale being interviewed. And I was like, oh, they're all these green screened NFFA people are just cool with admitting that they're manipulating low income citizens for the experiment. All right, then.
Yeah, I don't know that Dr. Updale really understood. Like,
still.
You create something, you have to know that when you're putting something together, that it could be used for bad things. Mm-hmm. So think about that when you're putting it together.
Yeah. Also, you know, a political party is extra, extra fashy when they have their own flags flying all over the place. You know, kind of like, never mind. And and then I'm like, Aunt May, Peter is so disappointed in you for being the architect of this experiment. Tony Stark is too.
And notice that her name was Dr. May Updale. Did you know that?
She's still May.
Yeah. Like,
come on, May. Come
exactly.
On. And then there goes the broadcast alert and those telltale sirens. The purge has begun.
Cindy kind Robinson like, comes on and reads the emergency broadcast announcement.
Yeah. And then the government is not happy. They're annoyed about these purge block parties. Like, they're supposed to be murdering, not having fun and drinking and dancing. How dare they? Send in the supervillain.
I want to call him Captain Smiley, but I guess it's General Smiley. And right. Oh, man.
So, yeah, so then we really fully learn. Yeah, the NFFA hires outside international mercenaries to infiltrate the purge, pretend to be local participants in order to pump those numbers up, right? Get the genocide of poor minorities that they don't want to take care of nationally accepted. It's like it's the wet dream of, again, never mind.
I think Updale finally started to get it, though. Like, she's like, wait a minute, because she's a psychologist. She's thinking, wait a minute. There were very low instances. You know, this doesn't make any sense. And unfortunately,
oh, yeah. Now she starts feeling bad about it.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, maybe you should have realized Project Murder Town was a bad idea from the start. you know, maybe.
Yes, she should have. She realized it too late for the citizens of Staten Island, but she also realized a little too late for herself.
Yeah, Marissa Tomei is gone. Literally thrown to the wolves because she realized what evil these people were doing. And then that fucking guy on the other side of things is just saying, like, oh, seems like the people really needed this. And I was like, yes, all these dead people are super grateful, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they didn't need it. Yeah, Arlo Sabian is his name. In case, I know you didn't know what it was, but that's his name. He's actually the chief of staff of the NFFA.
Mm. And then, yeah, with yeah, the infiltration of the towers, because I guess, you know, you don't have to pay anyone for staying home. If you kill literally everyone with a military force led by a creepy leather daddy, then,
and they can find them because they all have tracking chips. Unless you're like Naya and you didn't sign up to do it for the money, you didn't get a tracking chip. But everyone else did, including Isaiah. They all got tracking chips.
And then at the end of the movie, there's kind of like a mid-credits little thing. Because this is a prequel, clearly the shady tactics of the government worked and the purge becomes a nationwide thing. And not the insurance. These guys are not on your side.
No. Definitely not.
But yeah, so those are the notes I have on government stuff. But I still got notes on other
I still have notes involved. On other people, actually. There were these two women that had been basically bullied for their whole lives that decided to take all of these stuffies and turn them into bombs with, like, that were detonated by a cell phone.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, these two creepy old ladies with their demented dolls know how to make bombs.
Yeah.
And then the more I thought about it, I was like, you know what? I'll buy it. Like,
yeah. They had been bullied their whole lives and they just decided. Yeah. I mean, they were interviewed by the intake people and they just said, we don't want to take it anymore. We want to lash out. And you can kind of get that. You know, being bullied is not fun for anyone that's going through it. And they didn't want to take it anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. So Skeletor. Got a few notes of him. Yeah. I mean, again, you mentioned he kicks off the movie. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, here's someone who's really overacting, being a mentally unstable person. Check that box.
On Wikipedia, he is described as an insane, drug-addicted serial killer who goes out on purge night to unleash his anger on other people. And he's the one at the beginning who said, I want to purge.
Yeah. Yeah. He is just way too much of a caricature for me. I could never take it seriously. It's just a nutball performance and character. Like, I'm just like, all right, that's it. Ah, He-Man, I'm gonna poke you with these needles on my hands. Ah, do you like my purple eyes, He-Man? You
know? Oh my god. Oh man.
It's a little much, but it is what it is. Yeah, I talked about the wise men a little bit. I really liked them.
Yeah, I really did too.
Didn't get a lot of them, but I liked their vibe a lot. The old ladies.
They were fun. They scared the crap out of Isaiah.
Oh, yeah.
He walks in, he picks up the teddy bear and looks at it, turns it over, and then he turns around when he hears, like, the giggling. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, oh. And he throws it down and runs. It's like,
this is not good.
No. I think he bit off more than he could chew going out.
Yeah. At the block party, we get the weird movie and TV trope of everyone's phones going off with the video being shown. And I'm like, that doesn't actually ever happen, ever. Like that. It's like, no. It's a weird trope that you see all over the place. It's like, bling, yeah. Bong, bling, bling. Ah. That's never once happened in the history of humanity, I don't think.
You know what?
It happens in movies all the time.
Phones will go off. Like, my phone goes off if there's an Amber Alert. Mm-hmm. That's the only time I've ever seen people get some sort of an alert at the same time. Unless a group of us are on a text chat. Like, we have a chat thread going and someone texts and we're all in the same area. Yeah.
But it's like one of those movie tropes where it's like, and everybody has friends that send them the videos at the same time. And oh my God.
Yeah, no.
It's weird. I've never liked that trope. So it's not really like complaining about this movie because it's been done forever in so many things. It's weird. Again, I mentioned Designer was one of Kel's crew. Notice him, the really tall dude, the tall one.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just remember seeing him at the block party and going, holy shit, that's Designer. And then, yeah, his song Up played. And then his other, there's another one that's just, he did just for the soundtrack of this movie called Reaper Cometh that plays later. That's really cool.
Oh, okay.
So you get that. And then, yeah, we get the person in the warehouse where Isaiah is hiding with the red eyes and the whatever on their face. Are they just trying to be Scarecrow? You know, we'll get the whole Wish.com rogues gallery into this movie. Let's just throw them all in. Especially my favorite villain, Toothface, the diabolical moisture blaster.
Oh my gosh. Wasn't that mask was so creepy. The thing about the Purge movies that you learn early on, especially in 2 and 3, is the masks are so creepy. They're just all over the place.
Yeah. And I have a note about that, too. No, like, next, it's funny because I said I have to give the movie a due that it's clever that they made the masks an organic thing that just happened and then that continues on through the series. Like, it's, you know.
Yeah. It's because people, even though they're going and doing something that is legal at that time, they still don't want people to know it's them doing it.
Yeah.
I found that, you know, from a psychological standpoint, that's intriguing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's still like a person is torn between, oh, I'm going to go do this. I'm going to go purge because I can and it's my right. But, ooh, I don't want anyone to see me because what if it comes up
but
after?
It's going to be real awkward whenever my face is everywhere on Monday morning.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Because we're in the age of social media. People are going to record things and it's going to be posted. Yeah. That's how it works.
Yeah. And then I saved my two spiciest notes for last. So hold on. We get the quick little scene on the baseball field, and I was like, well, that's really fitting. Aww. Police brutality, America's real pastime. Oh. And then, lastly, look at all the trucks of hooded people coming through. Must be a Ted Nugent concert in town. Anyway.
Oh, my God.
and that's what I've got. That's the end of me.
Did you notice what song they were playing when they were running, the policemen were chasing the poor guy? And he wasn't the only one at the baseball field. Mm-hmm. Like, there were other bodies there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. America.
Mm-hmm.
So surreal. Given things that have gone on.
So I'll end on those jokes and those notes, and then we're good.
Okay. I'm looking to see if I have anything else. I don't think I do. I really think that one of the things DeMonico wanted to show was people impoverished, needing the money, and staying behind and risking their lives for money because they're so desperate.
Yeah.
And that watching it now, when I watched it, when it first came out, I saw it in the theater and things resonated with me when I watched it the first time, but it really resonates now, like so much more because of things that have happened. It affects you because you know, you just start to feel like we're three steps from that. And that's kind of terrifying.
Well, yeah. I mean, this was released a couple of years before 2020 with a lot of little things really amping up.
Yeah.
So with the whole George Floyd situation and all of that, this was before that. It's sad that it's almost, you know, prophetic in a way.
It is. So sad. I appreciate DeMonico for not watering it down. For putting things out there that are meant to spark your brain. For you to see it and be affected. Even though it's a, quote, horror movie. He's just put too many things in it that are so, they're just really, you know, things that could happen. Or you feel like they could happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's scary. It's how I feel when I watch The Handmaid's Tale sometimes.
Yeah, it's some of the best horror is just, you know, amplified reality, right?
It is. And Margaret Atwood said she, when she created Handmaid's Tale, or when she wrote it, she included things, everything that she included was stuff that had happened. So it wasn't, when you read it, you wouldn't just read it and think, oh, well, she just created this just for this book. No, they're based on things that really happened in the world. Well, I think we did it.
We did it. Did it. Yay!
This was quite covered it. Yeah, we did.
I'll be interested to see if we get any feedback on this one, if there's any thoughts.
Yeah, me too. I hope so. I want to know if people watch it now or had watched it then and then watch it now. If they, you know, have different thoughts that maybe the first time they watched it, just based on things that have happened. I know I did. So, I've got a few behind the scenes notes I think you might find interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
not going to read the first note that I have, though, because we've already talked about the entire thing. Some of these notes are not purely related to this movie, but to the basically for the series as a whole. So, James DeMonaco was inspired by real-life events when creating the series, including political antagonists. DeMonaco grew up in Brooklyn and Staten Island, and he lived in Paris for over 8 years. When he lived there, everything changed because he saw how the citizens of France have a different relationship with guns and violence than what we have in the U.S. He basically put a microscope on his own life, and he became obsessed with the differences.
Mm-hmm.
I already mentioned that he passed the directing torch to Gerard McMurray because he wanted it to be an authentic voice and felt that a Black director would bring the story to life in the appropriate way. He and his wife, who's a doctor, were almost killed by a drunk driver in Brooklyn. And in anger, his wife said, "I wish we could all have one free one, a murder, a year," which is something that helped inspire him in creating The Purge. After creating the original trilogy, DeMonaco wanted to show how the U.S. became accepting of the first Purge night and that concept. So one of the first promotional posters for this movie showed a red cap with the motto, "The First Purge." That refers to something similar that's been used in the election campaign of someone who was running for a high-level political office.
Sure, yes.
Actor Rotimi Paul, who played Skeletor, rode the New York subway to his audition for the role of Skeletor in full costume makeup.
Interesting.
Yeah. And finally, a sixth film is under development. I'm not sure what it's going to be yet. The only thing that I have heard is that they want Frank Grillo to reprise a role from a prior film in the series. So we'll see. Not sure.
Well, I guess I'm along for the ride.
You are.
Whether or not I want to, but I kind of want to, so it's okay. We're good.
All right, good. Because I'm trying to bring you on this ride like you brought me on Tremors, which is what you said earlier.
Fun. Be interested to get to all the other ones down the road at some point.
Yeah.
Oh, and there goes the feedback phone. Almost is on, call.
I feel like there's AI involved with that feedback phone.
I know.
It just knows.
Pick it up. Let's see. All right. We do have a couple pieces of feedback this week. However, they are not for this movie. that's okay. All thoughts about this movie have been purged from people's brains. Now,
yes.
No, but we do have a couple of feedback, leftover feedback or feedback that came in a little late or was seen late for last week's episode of Jaws 2. So since you sent it, we're going to read it. And I think you'll go first.
So Ginger Martinez says, "I absolutely love Jaws. Jaws 2 in particular because it's a tad cheesy and the gasoline explosion scene on the boat with the water skier is hilarious. Every time it's on TV, we all watch for that scene and never fail to crack up hysterically. Jaws 1 is definitely one of my all-time favorites. Thanks for the pod."
Awesome. Thanks for the feedback.
I feel like we did point that out. Like, it's like she's pouring the gasoline on herself on purpose. Yeah. Like, it's kind of strange.
Yeah. And then we have one from Lisa Edmondson Walker, who says, "I have a special love for Jaws 2, since they filmed part of it near where I grew up. I remember reading about the casting call for Beachgoers." Yes, I'm old. "I got to see the shark on a dock in a massive crate where my uncle had his boat at the time, and I loved the hotel where they filmed some of the scenes. It's also got some awesome cheesy moments and some pretty scary ones."
Thanks so much, Ginger and Lisa, for sending in your feedback.
Yeah.
We really appreciate it. And if you like to send feedback in, like Ginger or Lisa, you can do so a number of ways. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Run For Your Lives Podcast. You can find us on Twitter at RFYL Podcast. Email us at runforyourlivespodcast@gmail.com. And if you're enjoying the show, tell your friends. We are available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, pretty much all other podcast players, including YouTube. Go to runforyourlivespodcast.com for all the links you'll ever need, and give us a review on Apple Podcasts, as that's the best way to share the love and get us out there even more. We really appreciate it.
Yes, we do. Absolutely. And speaking about sharing the love, I've got some shout outs to things going on in the podcast universe around us. Of course, you can always go to podcastica.com and check out all the other great podcasts going on our network over at Podcastica, including, of course, my other podcast, Range Indeed. Me and Rima still going through season 2 of Sweet Tooth and just loving it, having a ride. Man, these past couple episodes have been so good, and I've already seen the next one that we're going to cover next week. Of course, I always watch like as soon as we're done recording one, so I'm super excited for that one to jump into episode 6 next week, so tune in for that one.
It's going to be over before we even know it.
I know. There's only like 3 episodes left for us to cover of Sweet Tooth, but then we're able to slide right into the next thing we're covering. So I'll go ahead and announce that because it's been announced on the Strange Indeed socials and stuff as well today. Yeah, me and Rima, after our coverage of Sweet Tooth, we will be sliding right into the returning season 6 of Black Mirror on Netflix.
Love it.
Oh, I'm so excited. I love Black Mirror so much. I'm glad it's back and we're ready to tackle these new episodes. As bleak, dark, twisted, disturbing, maybe heartwarming, a little bit. Sometimes they give us that.
Yeah.
It depends. Whatever Charlie Brooker's got in mind. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm excited. But yeah, we do know where we're going after season 2 of Sweet Tooth. So Black Mirror coming up. So if you're a fan of Sweet Tooth and you've been listening, thanks. Keep checking it out. This next episode's going to be great. Or if you want to check out Sweet Tooth or watch it and you haven't listened, also check those things out. And then if you're a Black Mirror fan, then stay tuned to Strange Indeed coming up in the next month. Like within the next month, we'll be jumping into that. So
it's going to be so awesome.
I'm excited.
I've missed that show so much. There's just so many emotions with the episodes because they're all so different.
Yeah. And the cast of this, I watched the trailer earlier and just the people who are in this season. Yeah. Holy crap.
Yeah, they always pull in the big guns somehow.
Yeah, there's going to be some really cool stuff. So I'm excited. And of course, other shows going on in Podcastica right now, even though a lot of stuff is wrapping up. Marvelous Miss Maisel just ended. So there is a Perfectly Marvelous podcast. If you want to go back and listen to all their coverage of this final season, they were covering that there. And then also, Yellow Jackets season 2 just ended. But you have put up your coverage of that final episode, plus some feedback episodes been coming up this week.
Yeah, it's... we got a ton of feedback, let's just say. We had to split the feedback episode into 2. So the first one has been recorded, and Alex joins us for that one. And the second one will be recorded probably early next week. It's been a fantastic season. The finale was a little divisive for some folks, and we had a great conversation about it, and it was cool to get the fans of the show and our podcast. It was great to get their thoughts on everything that's going on. So, yeah, it was great.
Yeah. I, full transparency, have not watched the finale yet, but I think that's on the docket for tonight when we're done here. So yeah.
I'm interested in what you think.
It's overdue. I need to watch it.
Yeah. I personally thought they did a fantastic job. There were some things that I wasn't as crazy about, but they were very few. I thought so much of it was really well thought out. And yeah, you'll have to let me know what you think.
Oh yeah, for sure. And then of course the other great dark twisted show that's running right now, also in its season 2, is the MGM Plus show From, which, man, that show's been great. Again, I'm like an episode behind, but I'm going to catch up tonight if I got some time. And yeah, I'm excited for that one. From has been awesome. You can check out the coverage of that on the What Is From podcast with Alex and Liz. And they've been just killing it, knocking it out of the park over there as well. And again, I've said this, you know, shouting them out, not just covering the episodes as they come out, but I mean, at least one or two interviews with different cast members and actors from the show, like every week,
yeah,
between podcast episodes about the episodes of the show. They've like really formed a bond with a lot of the cast of that show, which is really cool. And yeah, that's awesome. I'm kind of jealous. I wish I could do that with a lot of the shows that I cover on Strange Indeed, because like, it's really cool. So it's awesome for them to have been able to do that. They did like the press junket for it before the season started. Like they were, man. So big ups to Alex and Liz for their incredible hard work. It's paying off, and just the awesome podcast that they've been doing over there. So if you're watching From, check them out and their coverage. And if you're not watching From, then get on that and check that show out because it's so good.
Yeah. It's such a complicated show, like to keep track of everything. But yeah, this past week, they interviewed the actors who play Christy and Ellis. So it was really cool to get to listen to those. Yeah, they've been so busy with that. Every week, another interview, more fun. It's pretty great.
It's so cool. And then lastly, we're going to give a shout out over to our friend Mark with his Adrenaline Cinema podcast, as he has our friend Kat over on there with him as they're diving into the new John Wick 4. So it's out, it's streaming, and they're breaking it down.
I've stayed away from that series mostly because of something that happens in the first one. Not a fan of it.
Because I have a feeling I know exactly what you're talking about, and it kind of drives the whole story. That's the point, you know?
Yeah, and I think that Rima will agree with me because we feel very similarly when it comes to animals. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I haven't watched the fourth one yet. I need to. I'm behind on movies. Like, there's been several movies that came out that I haven't had time to see. I think I need to go back to the theaters. I think I'm going to go to the theaters after work tomorrow. Well, tomorrow as you're listening to this, which is Saturday, because Spider-Verse 2 is out. So I think I'm going
to go see this weekend. Yeah, and I was thinking I might like to go see another movie that's actually right up our alley in May, star one of the actresses from Yellow Jackets, Sophie Thatcher.
Yeah.
Boogeyman comes out this weekend.
Nice, yeah. Should check that out too. And I'm sure we will cover that
definitely
later down the road when it's streaming and things like that.
Of course. So, yeah. We have to, right?
Oh, yeah. We love Stephen King. We haven't covered enough of his stuff. We should
hang out
with the King a little more. But
being a main podcaster, I feel like we have to.
Right. But that's it for other podcasts going on this week. But of course, you know, you can always tune back into us next week because we've got something fresh and juicy for you. What do we got next week?
Well, a family is thrust into a nightmarish realm that exists beyond our understanding. As the veil between the living and the dead grows perilously thin, their very souls become targets for a malevolent force that seeks to claim them.
Ooh-hoo.
We are discussing James Wan's 2010 film, Insidious.
Yes. We're tiptoeing through all the tulips to get to this movie. It's been a while. It's like, it's been a while coming, I feel like, because it's one of my favorites. It's been there for a long time. And it's just one of those that, like, you think about it, and I'm surprised, like, we haven't covered Insidious yet. So we got to do it.
You know what's funny, too, is Paik is now, every time I'm asking him, what should we cover next week? He's saying, Insidious 2, Insidious 2, Insidious 2. Yeah, it's kind of funny.
We'll get there eventually, I'm sure. It's another one, just like as you listened here where we're starting our jump into The Purge. I think there's like several different series that I'm really wanting to like get a kickstart on, and Insidious is one of those.
Yeah, so. I like that idea though. I like jumping into different series.
Yeah, there's another one I've got in mind that I haven't even mentioned to you yet that I'm like, we should start doing, even though I know both of us struggle with the first one, but I think it'd be fun to go back and try with and start.
Okay, so. Well. Now I'm curious.
Yeah. I might tell you offline, but everybody else who's listening, you got to stay tuned. You got to wait.
Well, with that, we have reached the end of a very creepy and traumatic episode covering the first Purge. Thanks, everyone, for listening. I'm Daphne.
And I'm Paige.
And if you have to run, you better run for your lives.
Bye-bye.